Welcome to Brand Jack. This is a podcast. I'm Jack Polinsky, and each week we're going to share an insight to help you elevate the value of your brand and take the vapor and turn it into value. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is our podcast on the topic of good brand governance. First of all, I'd like to introduce Paul Martina. G'day, Paul. G'day. How are you?
Happy to be here.
Paul is our brand marketing strategist and works very closely with our creative teams to develop good governance-based brand strategy that is then delivered into a marketing and behavioural business process. So I'm going to have a conversation with Paul. We're going to share some insights and ideas today about what constitutes good brand governance. So just explaining the topic, it's important to understand that brand governance is an issue that sits underneath all businesses and all brands. We look at branding from a creative and cosmetic standpoint, but more and more as the world of brands continues to grow, we are now confronted with the reality of understanding the governance foundations that actually create, underpin brands and allow us to build brands as assets. We often think about brand from the perspective of building equity. We buy homes and we take mortgages and we build equity in that asset. And we understand that context. Building a brand and delivering a brand to the market is no different. We have to invest in our brands to build equity. So there's no point spending our days building brand value if we can't protect, leverage, and capitalize on that investment. Brand governance is the cornerstone to that process. So why is good brand governance so important? Well, it connects you to a process that will ensure that you mitigate risk that can cause financial, political, emotional, and commercial upheaval that could be seismic and life-changing if it's not considered at the beginning. So, Paul, we've worked on brands together for many, many years. Some of the experiences we've had with our customers and when they come in to talk to us about their brand, we often start by telling them the hard story. How do you feel that changes the way they feel about what they're doing in their brand journey?
For many of them, it's a wake-up call. A lot of people assume that because they've got a logo and they might have TM next to that, that they're protected and they own it. So not having that trademark effectively lodged and registered is the first pitfall many of them have. The second is that if they haven't got the structures of their company set up right, they're not actually building the equity you talked about. And to build that equity so that you actually have something which, if you ever choose to have an exit strategy, is measurable, is vitally important to businesses today.
And it's not only isolated to just the core brand itself. So, definitely trademarking the brand name that you are running your business under the flag of is so very, very important. But quite often, we find that people don't see the link between the IP, the intellectual property that they're developing and generating within their businesses, and how it needs to be connected to a brand that's protectable and ownable. Mm-hmm. So it's not only just the top layer of brand governance that's important, but it also connects far more deeply in terms of employment agreements with staff, the assignment of intellectual property, where it sits, how it's connected, who owns what and who protects what is all part of the brand governance landscape. The couple of the things that are really important is the difference between, the intellectual property we're generating and making it visible, then making and using trademarks that deliver that intellectual property, developing structures that are quite complex often.
Mm. And it's one of those, again, catch-22s, that if a person doesn't understand it or see it, if they're not aware of this, they're not actually doing the activities that will add that further value to the IP. If they can capture it effectively with their governance and the structures of their companies, it actually causes them to behave in different ways and to protect that. And when you do that, you're actually not only building equity, but you're building a brand voice that's more effective because you're working on your brand all the time.
There's a real psyche shift when you understand that what you're delivering has a value, that there's a structure, there's an investment that has been put behind holding it together and keeping it valued. And, you know, when you actually engage in understanding and building, or more importantly, invest in building a good governance infrastructure behind and underneath all the assets that show your face to the market, it changes your mindset. It changes the way you feel about those things. So when you're making strategic decisions at a board level, when you're talking about innovations, when you're talking about making decisions about structure, because you value it, you're willing to protect it, and it's important that it provides some visible return to you, will change your mindset as to how you respond to those issues of growth, evolution, and development.
It's funny you mentioned board meetings, and in a board, there's a lot of different personalities and people coming from a lot of different directions and areas of expertise. It's not until you actually see the figures next to a brand as an equitable asset that some of those people realize that they have to treat it in a different way. We see engineers, CFOs, people who don't normally value brand, change the way they behave and make different kinds of decisions because they understand it.
Absolutely. I remember a very interesting article from the Harvard Business School. It was a case study on, I think it's mining for gold in non-for-profit brands, in the sector of non-for-profit companies. There was a case study that they brought out around Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. And Habitat for Humanity is a global brand with significant global reach and brand value. But they never actually went through a process of understanding what that brand was worth. And they would go into negotiations with partners, with joint ventures on initiatives and projects to help them achieve a visibility in the marketplace, but without a context of what they were bringing to the table. So what they walked into meetings to negotiate from the position of asking for help, which put all the power in the partner's hand. They then went through a process of actually collecting and collating and understanding the value of their brand. They went through a process of valuing their IP and ensuring that they had the governance structures around that to protect that asset. In the process of doing that, what they realized was the true value of their brand, and it was organizationally seismic. It was pivotal. It changed their complete cultural mindset. So they no longer walked into a meeting. The next, you know, when they saw the number on the piece of paper, they went, hang on a minute, we're worth something here. So we're actually bringing value to these partnerships and putting that value on the table. The next negotiation they did was very different because they understood that they had a value that they brought to their partners. So this opens up a whole level of evolutionary thinking simply because they bothered to get their governance right, their governance process identified they had assets, which enabled them, because they had good governance, to value those assets. You know, there are many stories. There are great stories like that one, and there are also stories of people who make really big mistakes as well.
But it pays to get that advice early. We had a new client come in just a couple of weeks ago, and we sat down at the table and I started to have this conversation with him and asking how his IP was held and how he managed governance, and he kind of had this blank look on his face, and about 5 minutes later he said, oh, is that why? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, my lawyer and my accountant just restructured all of my my companies and holding entities, and I had no idea why they were doing it, but that's exactly what they've done. And I said, great, you're in good hands. You should really listen to these guys because they know what they're doing.
Yeah, no, in this particular instance, that therefore had a vehicle, he had a structure into which to place his intellectual property and his brand assets that would protect them and enable him to leverage them. Quite often we're working with people who come simply to create a logo, a website, a brand, identity, without actually having the infrastructure of where they're going to put it built for them.
The week after that meeting, he had a conversation with somebody who he was looking to potentially be bought out by, and it changed the whole dynamic because his brand was owned separately and he had that governance in place. He could create a joint venture where he retained the strength in the relationship, which was much more powerful for him.
In that case, I could see an opportunity for him to license the brand
exactly. And
collect a royalty, right? So, again, growing the value, cumulative value of his brand into the future. So a couple of key things to remember when you start looking at governance. So this is very basic governance insight, but I quite often find that the simplest things get overlooked most often and the complex things get a lot of focus. TM. You can use the TM, trademark, symbol, the icon that you see after certain brand names. You can basically use that on anything, anywhere. It is a amber light. It's an indication that you are in the process of a trademarking agenda. And so it's sort of telling people, sending people a sign saying, I feel this is my intellectual property. But it does not indicate formal ownership. Only the R symbol, the registered symbol, is an indicator of registered trademark certified ownership. In Australia, it's actually a federal offence, criminal offence, to use the R symbol on a logo if you do not actually have the certificate. So it's a very important distinction. You can only use the R next to your trademark, next to your brand name, if you have it registered with IP Australia and hold the ownership certificate. So many people make that mistake.
Absolutely. When we first start looking for a brand name, a new name or a sub-brand product, the first thing we do is search IP Australia to find names that are appropriate. And there's some tricks in there, because if you don't do the phonetic searches properly, your name, as we had with a client just recently, who had two N's in their name, or one N in their name, rather, somebody else with two N's that sounded exactly the same, meant that they couldn't get the trademark. But they couldn't see that on a simple search.
No, because I mean, there's a lot to know about trademarks. There are 45 classes of trademark divided into goods and services. So your particular brand may operate in one specific or across a number of specific classes of trademark description. The other thing to remember is that brands' trademarks are phonetic. It's how they sound, not how they're spelt. So dropping an N or slightly changing the nuance of pronunciation is not a safe harbour.
Changing an F to a PH.
Or spelling schools with a Z. It will not make a difference because it's how it is perceived, heard and understood by the average person in the street without confusion that defines its ability to be distinctive. So this again now leads us to a different layer of conversation in that the risks involved in actually hitting the market with a brand that not only you don't own, which puts you in a liability position, but also the possibility that you are actually contravening someone else's established trademark. In today's highly branded world and also incredibly motivated, litigious world, this is an area of that needs careful consideration because it can open up significant liability.
If somebody has started trading and they're using a logo that exists, particularly if it's in the same class of goods, the concept of passing off as that client or leveraging on the existing reputation can mean that you have to actually pay back all the revenue that you've earned under that name to the person who owns the trademark, that's a business destroyer.
And that's an inbound and an outbound issue as well, because we're basically now living in a world where through our social and technology reach, we can be presenting our brands and building markets in other countries, other cultures. We've got to be very careful that we understand the liability that that we carry by potentially having a secure trademark in Australia, but selling product in the US. Mm-hmm. So we have one client particularly who was very, very successful in Australia. It was a fashion brand and selling clothing here to a particular market. And started to get a little bit of traction in the US and started to promote their product in the US and started to deliver the product and sell a lot of it in the US until they were hit with a significant lawsuit because their name contravened the name of a trademark in the US. They ended up having to not only pay for a convoluted court battle. Not only were they found guilty of passing off and trading illegitimately in that market under a brand they didn't own, a trademark they didn't own, she also had to pay back all the profits she had made while passing off in that market, which was catastrophic to that individual, her business, and ultimately her brand. So there are some really nasty stories that we hear on a daily basis because simply people didn't take the first foundational step on any branding journey. Yes, by all means, design something you love, make it look great and enjoy the process, but ensure that the governance is right.
And many people also make the mistake that thinking because I've got a business name lodged with ASIC that that is the same as a trademark. It is not, and it doesn't carry any weight compared to a trademark, the same as this is with domains. So while you may have a domain trading under your name and a ASIC listing with that name, the truth is that is only waving the flag and putting you above the radar so that the person who might actually own it can see you, and that can get me in trouble.
Yeah, and, you know, there's another thing to consider here as well on top of all of that. So once you open the governance Pandora's box, things come flying out at full pelt at you, and unfortunately there's a lot to know. And that's why quite often people don't think about governance and sweep it aside because it's a minefield of information and knowledge. There is also the issue of governance in terms of the culture of your business and how you run your business on a day-to-day basis. For instance, ensuring that your staff respect the issue of copyright. Now, copyright I'm going to talk about in two levels here. The first one is, do you have a copyright creed in your organisation? Are you protecting yourself from your staff taking an image off a website that is owned by somebody else at random and posting it on your website without proper permission to use that image? Today, photo libraries and individuals can trace and track their image usage. And if you are found to be using an image without the proper governance protocols having been taken and in place, you can be significantly fined. I mean, some of these images, particularly rights-managed images, can be in the tens of thousands of dollars and even hundreds of thousands of dollars per use. So it's very important to mitigate how you feel and treat about copyright in your organisation. That's just as much a part of good brand governance as creating a trademark is.
Our copyright creed is actually a written policy, and it's also framed and it's on the wall in our studio. But it's more than that. We have systems behind it that back it up, and you have to have processes that do that. In our case, if we purchase something like an image from an image library, we will actually maintain a record of that, when it was purchased, where it was purchased from, and which client it was purchased for, so that we can actually trace that back. If anybody were to question one of our clients, it's in our register, and the date and means it was purchased are there. It's very important to keep that for imagery, for music that you might use in presentations.
Music's a big one.
Yeah,
people keep using music or grabs out of movies, mm-hmm. or all of this information is very much covered by copyright, and its use is very, very monitored and managed by powers internationally beyond us. So very important. Now, if you grab a picture of Brad Pitt and you take a little bit of a corner of that image and you use it somewhere, the chances are you will be putting yourself into a liability position.
It's very simple these days to search by image just in Google. You can have to throw it into the search bar and it'll look for that image anywhere on the net. We used to think we were flying under the radar, and we were. A local mom-and-pop shop who ran a corner shop here and chose a name and did some advertising using imagery probably wouldn't have gotten seen 10 years ago. But with the social media and the way things spread and go viral, you never know where your imagery or...
And you never know who's looking at your stuff.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Very much so. So another little example of a similar problem that we encountered some years ago was that using, for instance, an image of a surf lifesaver. Now, you know, we had an image of a surf lifesaver looking out at the ocean, so we couldn't even see the person's face. It was photographed from behind, and there was a scene of the ocean and a surf lifesaver standing there vigilantly looking at the ocean. Now, we bought that image from a photo library. It was a royalty-free image, which meant that we didn't have to pay royalties to use it. We paid it for a small price to use it. But we actually got a letter from the Surf Life Saving Association of Australia, who have the image of the surf life saving cap registered as a trademark, and we had to withdraw the ad because we were contravening their copyright, even though we'd bought it from a photo library, even though we'd put all those checks and balances in place. The vigilance that's required is quite extreme and important to consider. As a director of a business, your fiduciary responsibility is to ensure you have protocols and processes in place to ensure that your best efforts are put in place to ensure you don't contravene copyright. There's another thing about copyright that I'd like to bring to the table as well, and that is that regardless of how much you paid somebody, what they designed, drew, developed, or delivered to you, unless you actually ask them to provide you with a piece of paper that formally assigns copyright ownership from them to you or whatever entity you wish it to go to, they own it. They are the authors. And so many times people miss this particular foundational step in good brand governance, that anything that was designed for you, regardless of how much you paid to have it done, how long ago it was done, if you don't actually have a formal assignment in writing signed by the originating author, they own it. They can come back at any time and claim ownership of it. That particularly comes to the fore when brands are being sold on the payday, when the valuations are clearly defined, you can end up with a nasty surprise.
It's, again, one of those traps. But if you have somebody in your court who's helping you to work through these things, you usually will get through and beyond them quite easily. It's the smaller kind of design houses, used to be computer coding houses, that had those IP things written into their contracts where they continued to own the IP, which locked you in to continue to go back to them. You should always be wary of that.
Mm-hmm. And remembering, too, that having the appropriate copyright confidentiality footers on material that you deem to be intellectual property is also a very important factor in just making sure that you're covering as much ground as possible, because this is all brand IP. Protecting that IP is critical because it differentiates and separates your brand, your business, from everybody else. Good brand governance is a much hidden part of a creative process that design agencies, creatives in general, don't spend a lot of time talking about, but we find is fundamental to the concept of delivering good brand strategy with responsibility and taking that responsibility.
Some of the things that come across our desk, we instantly know what it's going to mean to us. For example, if somebody wants a .com that's representative of their brand, the extra time and effort to find something that is available these days is extraordinary, and people don't realize how difficult that has become. That's why there's so many new top-level domains being rolled out, because they simply don't exist in an easy format anymore.
Is it every character of the English alphabet to six letters or five letters is registered as a .com? Every combination?
Every combination up to five letters has been bought and sold already.
That's right.
So somebody owns it. And it's approaching that for six letters. Many of them are just in banks of people that are holding them as a potential asset for one day. But it makes it very, very difficult. So hold on to your domain names. And for those of you who have a domain name, but it doesn't link directly to your business name, the regulations have changed in Australia, so you should really take a look at that.
Yeah, there's got to be a very clear linkage between the two, so that once upon a time you could have very different to call the company Pineapple Pty Ltd and have a brand name that was different. Today there has to be a clear parity and a connection between the two.
And you can really come unstuck with those things. We find that when people are coming to us for a rebrand or a refresh, quite often, you know, a brand that's 5 to 10 years old has moved on, has grown, and they need a new version of themselves, and they come to us for a rebrand. Small changes can affect you in very, very big ways. For example, changing a word or a two words that you once had butted up against each other with no space to now having a space between them might mean that it invalidates your existing trademark.
Particularly because there are two basic kinds of trademark. There's a composite mark, which is a picture, the way it looks, and then there's a word mark. The word mark is the phonetic representation, the word, the spelling of the name itself. That's the strongest form of trademark. Quite often people can't get the word mark, but they can get a visual manifestation of it that is unique, registered. But if at any point in the future you amend or change that, you are basically creating a new trademark. And your position in terms of the viability of that trademark could have changed in that period of time. The other thing to remember, too, that it's about who was there first. So, you know, we had one client not so long ago. There were two architectural firms, both sharing the same name in the same region. And we ended up having to define who was there first, because both had rights to that image. Unfortunately, this all came to a head because one of the architects finished a project and his check, his payment, was sent to his competitor, who had every right to bank it because it was the right name on the check, right? So obviously that created a commercial imperative to do something about it. And we went on a journey to find out how to fix the problem. Before we did that, and before we invested in that strategy of creating a new trademark name for our client, the architect that was our client, we had to check the governance position, which meant we had to check who was in the market first. It came down to 10 years ago, the difference of 1 week in existence. And unfortunately, it was the other architectural firm that was there first, so they had first rights, so my architect had to rebrand and create a new identity. Not that that hurt him, because now he's got a very innovative, contemporary new name and a new culture and a new energy that has helped them grow significant market share in their in Queensland and in their particular market. But, you know, it was a confronting and difficult period of time because a lot of equity had been built on that brand. I also want to bring up the point Paul mentioned before about the issue of domains. There is another aspect to this process of governance, and that is linguistics. Making sure that what you call your brand doesn't offend or mean something derogatory or inappropriate or negative in another language. Now, that doesn't have to be a language of a culture in a country. that can also be in an urbanized language sense, in a slang sense as well. Quite often we need to step back and check how others perceive the word we're putting forward.
And just like in governance and trademarking, we don't do it ourselves. We do the basics, but we have professionals that assist us. And when we want to have a brand that's going to go international, we actually run it through a set of linguistic checks that has covers as wide a region as possible. If you don't get that right, it can be held up forever in the annals of marketing mistakes. And there's one I always go back to. I had a beautiful car back in my university days. It was a Chevy Nova. And they tried to bring the Chevy Nova into the South American market, which was a great market for it, they thought. It was a smaller car, but big engine. It fitted with the machismo of the locals. But when they tried to sell it, it didn't sell until somebody finally told them that Nova means doesn't go in Spanish. So they tried to sell the car that didn't go. It wasn't very successful.
I think I bought that car. I can't remember. But look, one of the things we've got to remember is that we are part of a global community, and you know, our brands reach far beyond the worlds and communities in which we locally live. We are part of, you know, a village brand marketplace now, and our village is a global village. So making sure that the choices we're making are not just isolated to the perimeter of our little market, our little world, but consider how they will perform so that they are future-proofed on a global context. That makes it a lot harder, but that's actually good brand governance. That's good brand responsibility. The phonetic linguistic issues are very, very much important. So we've covered a lot of ground here. We've covered linguistics, we've covered copyright, we've covered domains, we've covered trademark usage, and we've covered IP protection. All of those components make up good brand governance. But I have a little story that I tell about brand governance, and I usually started like this. You know, I can talk about brand forever. I love branding. Branding's my craft. Paul and I work on branding every day, and every day's a good day to be branding. But we can go on about brand blah, 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 as much as you like. But blah, for us, actually stands for something. You have to have good visual brand strategy, the B. You have to have good legal strategy, L. You have to have excellent accounting strategy, A, and you have to have fantastically resolved HR process, performance process, H. That makes up the blah, blah, blah of brand. And if you have those components at the table, B for brand, L for legal, A for accounting, and H for HR, all sitting around the table, talking about your brand in the center of that conversation, then you usually walk out of that room with excellent brand governance. So thank you very much for listening. Look forward to catching up with you soon. Paul, thank you very much.
Always great to talk, Brand.
And we'll talk soon. Thank you for joining me, and you can find out more at jackpelinski.com. That's Jack, PERLINSKI.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Vimeo. I look forward to connecting with you soon, and remember, choose to succeed.